Hello and welcome to another episode of the CG Garage. This is episode number 158. And we have a very special guest with us that's hanging out, just hanging out for the day, Jeff Model.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
How are you?
Good.
So, Jeff, we were just talking about, just before I started recording, that you've been on this podcast many times. This is probably your fifth or sixth appearance on here.
Yeah, it feels like it.
Yeah. So this particular podcast is another one of the THU ones that I've done, and I've done several of them. And I've been sort of scattering them along so that I don't just inundate people about them. But you and I have been big THU fans and been talking about it for a while. So tell me a little bit about your impressions of THU and when you came on, and how that impacted the way that you think about events and all those things.
Yeah, so I mean, the last 10 years or so, I've spent probably 3 to 4 months of every year going to events in many different industries. And I think it was through you and probably a handful of other people initially that I had learned about THU, and everybody was raving about it. So I think 2 years ago I went.
Yeah.
Really, just because I'm involved with a lot of different events and helping to organize some, I was really just going to see how this event that was relatively small in the grand scheme of things, you know, was so successful. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was just going just to see the nuances of how the event was run. And I want to say, like, by day three of that first event I went to, like, I full on drank the Kool-Aid. I mean, it's seriously one of the best events I've ever been to.
Right.
It's super inspiring. The caliber of people there is off the chart.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, it's just an amazing thing. You can be standing in a line waiting to get a badge or a t-shirt, or waiting for, you know, food out of the food truck at nights, mm-hmm. or a drink somewhere. In any other conference, if you started a random conversation with somebody in front of you in line, they'd probably humor you for about 30 seconds and wonder why you're talking to them. Right. At THU, completely the opposite. I mean, people encourage that. And, you know, I've met some of the really good friends over the last couple of years at THU just from random lines like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, really cool thing. And this particular episode involves a lot of people who basically not only drank the Kool-Aid, but decided to actually back it up with some dollars. Right. And these guys are people that have, been doing this for a while. The way I've done this is, as these particular talks, I was actually part of THU TV, and I was able to do some interviews for THU TV, and Andre was kind enough to let me have all of the recordings of that and turn them into podcasts. So because these are shorter, I take two different episodes that I did for THU TV and turn them into a single podcast. So the first episode is with Grayson Davis, who is, we all call him the White Knight of THU.
Absolutely.
Because he's from Lenovo, and when he came to THU, he basically said, oh my God, this is the event that really fosters creativity, where we can enable our technology to come into this and help people. And he knows that. And he also talks about one of the other things that happened, and you were there, is this year we talk a lot about what they called B-sides, which was the business part of things. And that's an important part of creativity, is understanding how to turn your creative output into a business, because otherwise, what's it for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed those sessions this year. It was insightful to hear from some of the top people in the industry and kind of how they've managed to grow the successful businesses they have. And it's a side that you don't often hear from the industry.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. And also joining him was Eric Miller from Noman, which is part of the education part of things. And Noman obviously has a big interest in making sure that people get that right education and understand what it is. And they're a very successful visual effects school. And Eric is the CTO. So he's, you know, like, how do I make the technology work for my school so that everyone has the right tools? Which is always a challenge. As you know, we always talk about tools versus creativity. And what's interesting about THU is that conversation is reversed, right? Most of the events that we talked about, and this is something that came up in 2016 when you were there.
Yes, yeah.
You were basically like, this is why this event is different, is that creativity is on top of technology as opposed to the other way around, right?
Yeah, I mean, the 3D industry, all the events I go to, I mean, you always see it, you know, there's components of creativity in all the events, but almost all of the events have a really heavy focus on the settings and the software and the workflows that are done. And what I found so refreshing going to THU was it was really about why we're all in these industries in the first place. And it's the art,
right?
It's the creativity. But it's rarely spoken about, more so at events, but definitely not online.
Right.
You almost never hear the conversations about the creativity side of all of these, creative industries. So it was really refreshing to be in a massive group of people all talking about this side of the industry.
Right. And speaking of online, the second part of the podcast, is two people. One is Daniel Wade and, Ford, who won the golden ticket, for, THU, which I will speak about in a moment. But Daniel Wade comes from ArtStation, right? And ArtStation is someone you guys, you're very familiar with those guys. You run obviously CG Architect, which is a little bit different. But ArtStation really sort of sees the fact of empowering artists in a lot of way on their site, right?
Yeah, I mean, Leo, who's one of the founders of ArtStation, and it's been a mentor for many years, you know, back starting all the way back to 2001 when I started CG Architect. I mean,
right.
you know, I've known him since back then, and we've you know, kept in close touch for all these years. What he's been able to do and his team and whatnot, what they've done with ArtStation is phenomenal. I mean, I guess he's learned over the years of many years of having developed most of the major communities in the CG industry.
Yeah.
I think he's finally,
and he helped a little bit on CG Architect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well.
So when he kind of left the industry briefly to go work for some of the software companies, he left and started Ballistic, which is a software development company. Mm-hmm. And CG Architect was the very first client that they had. And, you know, now they've, Leo, I think probably just, you know, can't ever leave it alone. He's got to go back to the community building again. And I mean, I think he just checked off all the right boxes. And, you know, obviously they're one, I think something like the other week I was looking, I think they're under 800th most trafficked website on the internet now.
Yes. I mean, that is huge.
It's unprecedented.
I mean, all the sites on the internet in the top 800, the fact that they're in there.
I think in like 2 or 3 years too, they've managed to pull that off.
I think it was 3 years.
Yeah.
Which
is incredible. It's unprecedented.
Yeah. So obviously ArtStation is a big part of the community and a big thing. And what they did also is they helps, they're a big proponent also of THU and sponsors of THU. And one of the sponsorships they do is they do go out there and they do this thing called the Golden Ticket, which is kind of awesome. It's kind of like, you know, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And the person that won the Golden Ticket this year, because you have to submit your artwork that's inspired by a theme that they do, which is also a really great idea for the site to sort of get people to do things and submit their work, was Ford. So Ford won the ticket. What I find fascinating about Ford, he's actually a technical director at ILM, and he does not do art for his, you know, for his job. He's a technical person that does, you know, code building and everything else. Mm-hmm. But on, you know, at night, he'll go home and try to create art, and he created a beautiful piece that got him the golden ticket. So it's really nice to see people that are not just technical people or artists, but also very technical people that use art as an outlet in some way and got that going on. So it's really cool. Like you said, we meet really fascinating people at this event, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've ever been to an event with that many talented people all in one place.
I mean,
you always go to events and you always meet talented people, but I've never been to an event in 20 years that has had that density of talent and really humble talent to boot.
Right. And I think before we move on to the podcast, which, and I know this intro is going a little long, but since Jeff is here, let's chat for a little second. One of the things that you and I talked about back in 2016 was the fact that we felt the energy that happens at the event like THU is something that would be great to bring to the architecture and ArchViz community. And that was basically what inspired us in 2017 to try to bring more architectural content there. And that will continue to happen. I think Andre saw that, and we are going to try to do the same thing in 2018. And I'm excited to see who we're able to bring to the event. I know there's several plans and several ideas, and we're excited about it. But I think that that connection between the concept artists and the architects inspiring each other is going to be a big part of what would be great for 2018 at THU.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of super talented people that work in architecture. I mean, and you having come from VFX know that there's a ton of architects that work in VFX. So I think it's a very complementary skill set that, you know, can be leveraged in many places. So I think it makes sense to have that type of mindset at THU as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, that being said, hopefully you guys will enjoy this really fun podcast with Grayson and Eric and Daniel and Ford. Thanks, guys.
Welcome to another CG Garage, where the chaos group talks. You'll know it's over when the last bucket drops. We're gonna fire off rays in high dynamic range. We know that ambient occlusion is passe. Global illumination won't lead you astray. And while image-based lighting is really swell, you need to make sure everything has Fresnel.
I've got Eric and Grayson. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks and, for having us, man.
I've known you for many years. Obviously, you're over at Noman.
Yes. Right?
And I've known you for many years as well through THU.
Right.
And you're over at Lenovo, right?
Absolutely.
And you guys have been longtime sponsors, and obviously, you're known as the White Knight.
Yeah, that thing just kind of took a life of its own.
I think,
yeah, Scott said it once, and it was an honor to have him say it, but my team has found a wonderful way of making sure that they have fun at my expense with the White Knight now.
Yes, make you feel bad.
Which is good. Everyone needs that.
Yeah, I don't blame them. That's a good thing to do. Keep you humble. But you guys obviously have been partners for a long time, and you are a technology company, mm-hmm. right? You create great hardware. I know because I get to use it.
Thank you.
But where do you feel the connection is that you have between your tools and what you're offering the people for THU and that bridge that you make?
Yeah, I mean, one, I think it's important that from just a business perspective, and that's a huge, huge part of what we're talking about here at THU this year. One of the messages was that, you know, people, given the level of competition in all areas, given the explosion of social media and the way that companies interact with their markets, and that it's much more on a personal level, they should expect more than just a good product at a good price. They should be looking at companies who are truly invested in their futures and help open doors and take some of the investment that they're receiving in people buying the products and reinvest in the market. So I think that's part of it, is getting across to them, yes, there are the tools, but part of the tools is also just investments in the market and opening doors. Okay. As far as, you know, from purely the technology standpoint, you know, we get really excited about our products and the quality of the products, and taking that hardware and enabling all the incredible software and the tools that are out there. And it can be hard to keep up with to do that. But when you see it in practice at a place like this, between collabs and the demos and sort of supplying the hardware that everybody's using, it's really exciting to see it really all come together. We always do it kind of in theory, mm-hmm. but you got to see it. And so here's that chance for us to really see it. So that's part of the thrill for us.
And so, Eric, you're over at Noman, and you're I believe, the CTO of Noman. Is that
yes.
correct?
Yes.
But you know very, very well the struggles that you deal with in terms of sort of getting the right set of tools in front of people to use.
Yes.
And technologies fairly complicated these days, and there's a lot of things to consider. So tell us some of the struggles you deal with as someone that helps that out.
Obviously at Noman, we're a little different than a traditional studio because just the amount of applications that we have to teach, right? So we have to make sure that the not just a few content creation applications are going to be working on a box, but we have to make sure they all work, that they all function, and not just at a standard level, at a high level. The students expect pro quality works or they expect to create pro quality demo reels and stuff
right.
by the end of it. Not that they all will, but they want to come as close as they possibly can. And if the tools are not necessarily available for them, you know, they get a little pissed off, you know,
right.
obviously. And so you want to make sure that you're putting in front of them at least a tool that they can actually use where everything works. That's a struggle. I think we have 150 applications, I think, that we have to install. It's well over 100. I mean, that's multiple versions of Maya, multiple versions of, I mean, multiple tools. Because our instructors come in and they're like, well, I've only been using this version. And then they're not on the latest version typically in production, right?
Right.
So we're finding that we have to put multiple, and it obviously creates a little bit of a struggle for us.
Sure.
The storage is another issue. And this just how the students use the products. They're hard on things, you know?
Right.
It's like, they just are. They're difficult on systems because they don't have the same, I guess, the knowledge to keep things efficient. So they will literally polybomb their own scenes by accident without knowing it, and they'll hit render and everything will come to a crawl. So
right.
those are the main struggles, is just dealing with the nuances of dealing with novices, and then obviously we're different than a normal studio that way, you know.
Yeah. Do you think that the studios, in a sense that, do you feel that over the last several years that the hardware has gotten more complicated from your perspective, but way simpler from the artist's perspective? Like, do you work extra hard to make that hardware sort of just not be irrelevant, where it's just about, like, I don't even have to think about it, it's doing what it's supposed to do, and I just work?
I think that over the last couple of years, I think that hardware and software has come leaps and bounds in terms of making it almost transparent to the end user.
Right.
For the most part. I mean, it really 10 years ago, it was a struggle. I mean, there wasn't very many vendors you could deal with, and you had to kind of deal with what they were sending you.
Right.
And sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
Right.
And so I think today, for the most part, the from everybody from Lenovo, they all have kind of a general baseline that they operate on. I don't think it's gotten more complex. I think it's gotten easier for me.
Oh, that's nice.
I think from just sheer workstation perspective. Now, I think that you go beyond the workstation to enterprise networking and stuff like that. Yes, that has gotten more complex as the demands and the requirements as computers get faster. You can push more frames through it, larger frames through it, larger data sets. It taxes things beyond the workstation, and so you have to gauge kind of like where that breaking point is so that you can keep everything up to date. So it's not just like you just upgrade workstations and go, oh, we're done.
Right.
It's like, okay, we got really fast workstations. Now software is able to really push the boundaries of what that workstation is able to do, which is bigger frames, bigger data sets. Storage network speeds have to get upgraded. I mean, it requires almost a complete infrastructure change in some cases. So
absolutely.
That part gets complex.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because you and I have talked about like what we want our ideal workstations, and talked to a lot of other guys about what that is as well. And those workstations for us, it's about making things so fast.
Yes.
That basically we don't have to wait for things or
yes.
wait for a result
right.
to
right.
come back. And the thing that you and I will always ask any hardware vendor is like, shove as many GPUs into that thing as you can, because
right.
we know that that's an easy way to iterate up to the speed of the process.
Right, and it scales linearly. I mean,
right.
there's very few things in any technology that scale linearly like parallel processing does, right?
Right?
So, the more you throw in it, the faster it's going to be. I mean, that's just the nature, right?
Right.
Now, when I say fast, it's only certain things become faster. There's other things that it's not going to
impact,
right?
It's not going to change, right?
But I think as year over year, I think we're going to see more and more and more parallelism, which is then going to, I kind of mentioned it in my talk today, it's going to start taxing other aspects. You're going to bottleneck other places. I think Grayson and I were just talking about it. It's going to put a tax on storage. It's going to put a tax eventually on your memory bus. It's going to put a tax somewhere that you're going to go, oh,
right.
too much is too much. But that's going to be a problem for these guys.
Yeah,
to solve.
I mean, and part of the response that we've had to have with all of these demands is to increase our capabilities to where it's truly not just hardware anymore. We also work on software to bridge that gap,
yes.
Right? So we've been able to develop, you know, a Lenovo Performance Tuner, mm-hmm. where essentially now it's got set profiles that allow, it does not, I will say this, there is no excuse for not understanding your preferences right. in your software.
Right.
But once you have that understanding, you can use, you know, LPT, Lenovo Performance Tuner, as a tool to go in and with one click, fine tune it so that you're making sure that you're getting the most out of your hardware,
right.
And it's getting optimized and connected mm-hmm. to the software so that you just be an artist.
Right.
Yeah.
But honestly, these are things we can only discover and really understand if we've got a really strong collaboration with the actual users. And so that's where it's been really good, you know, working with you guys, and you guys have worked with our development team
right.
to say these are the things you're going to need to look for. And so when we're all collectively making the products for the market.
Right.
It's a whole lot better.
Yeah.
And our development team actually very much embraces that versus just engineers basing it off of what technology emerges.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be a limit, obviously, to the physics. I mean, the physics is what it is. And so there's only so much you can maybe do
yep.
with the physics of it. I mean, before you melt something or before it's just, you simply run out of space on a board, right?
Right.
And so, you know, we have to look at maybe creative ways to maybe work around those aspects. So,
well, we were doing, like, just as an idea, we were doing some weird stuff, as I do at Chaos Group Labs, and we were trying something on cloud computing, and it was really, really fast, but there was a latency problem, mm-hmm. obviously, with a certain thing we were doing, because it turns out that they were trying it in, you know, in Bulgaria, and they were cloud computing to Los Angeles, and they're like, unless I can go faster than the speed of light, I can't change anything.
Right. Even then, you also have the latency of these things bouncing from router to router to router, and it just takes one little
yeah, sure.
hiccup somewhere, and all of a sudden your latency is not going
it's
to be
adding up. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It's adding up. But I think I don't want to get too technical because yeah. I know that some of our listeners are like,
yeah.
but I can geek out all day.
Oh
trust
yeah, me too.
Yes, it's a danger. Yes.
But I want to think about put yourself in the position of the artist right now, right? If you think about the artist and what is there, and thinking about my ideal computer or my ideal piece of hardware or what I need or what I'm thinking about. What do you think that is, Grayson? What do you think is the piece of hardware that you have heard from the artist is something that's going to make their lives easier?
I mean, I think the first place, and certainly, right, Eric will know more about this, but that understanding of where are you getting your performance from within the system. Is it the GPU? Is it the CPU?
So having some basic knowledge of how the computer is operating.
Right.
Yeah,
not
I
just
mean,
saying, ooh, it's a magic box.
It's it's a tool. I mean, for many of these artists, you say, well, would you imagine just somebody handing you some paints and asking you to make a masterpiece?
Right.
Of course not. You would really want to intimately know your tools and what you're working with. And I
right.
think with technology, with that leap, it can be a little bit easy, especially when the box is, you know, the system is all closed up.
Right.
I don't need to see everything
yeah,
that's inside.
Closed. Yeah, a lot of people just want to leave it closed.
Open it up.
Yeah.
Take a look. We make the system
actually,
so you can do that
no.
and not make a problem.
It is actually one of my favorite things about the Lenovo box is how
oh, that's
fat.
Great.
Yeah, because we get a lot of GPU tests. We do a lot of stuff like that. So I can sit there and I can swap out a GPU in about 12 seconds,
yeah.
you know, just boom, 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 boom. And then it's like, it's so fast. So I can test, iterate really fast to do all these, you know, benchmarks and weird stuff. That is really cool. And it's cool to open it up. You're right. But it's like, I'll use another analogy. You wouldn't be a race car driver and not understand how an engine works.
Yeah.
That's exactly, that
part
was
of
one
the
of,
analogy yeah. I use, but I think it's tough because I'm not, is golf, right?
Yeah, okay.
A golfer would never walk into a sporting goods store, just get a set of clubs and play in the U.S. Open. They're going to get clubs that are tweaked, fine-tuned. Their swing
yeah.
is going to be analyzed. And that's really where we're trying to get to is
right.
how can we analyze your workflow, how you work, how right. you operate within your software mm-hmm. to wrap around an entire solution that just fits you like a glove.
Right.
Right? So that's always the goal. We're getting closer and closer to it with the combination of the hardware and the design of it.
Right.
Software tools that connect the applications to the hardware. And then just overall capabilities within the company. We have a customer solutions team that, you know, customers can work with and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. We can simulate that.
Right.
And run through some of the challenges so that you can just keep working sure. while we try coming up with why some things might be happening. So I think it's that's always the goal, is to get to a point where it feels like a glove to the artist
yeah.
so that they can just be the best artist.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's going to be growing pains a little bit, because, you know, I brought this up in my talk this morning where, you know, you asked
I heard it went really well, by the way. I heard your talk was amazing.
I thought it went good. I felt good about it.
Yeah,
but
it was
really good. I'm the one giving it, so I'm not the one that should be, I'm like patting myself on
That's
the back.
That's fine. I was just in the crowd, so yeah. I'll say it.
It was awesome. It was cool.
It was really good.
But what I basically do is, like, you'll ask somebody, and you're just like, well, what software do you use? And they'll be like, Maya. Right? And so, you know, some people will sit there and go, well, I'll just look at what the minimum requirements are or and just add to it.
Right.
But what you're not thinking about is that within a package like Maya or even like Photoshop, it depends on what you're doing with the software. It's very different if you're modeling versus running dynamic simulations. Your requirements are going to be drastically different.
Okay.
Very different.
Yep.
So it really, it's about how the user is using the tool. And when I say tool, it's the software. The hardware, then, you customize to that specific need. Now, how many of us just use one piece of software? None of us, right? So it's not just one software that you have to actually kind of sculpt around. You have to sculpt around all the other supporting applications.
Right.
And so you might be running real-time app. You might be running, you know, everything on, you know, CPU-based, you know, serial-based processing applications. You need a system that's going to be able to support all of them at once, you know, if that's the type of user you are.
And also there's a system that you want that's flexible and
yes.
upgradable.
Yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, I mean, that's something I certainly appreciate when I crack open the Lenovo boxes yeah. is that I can, like, swap out that GPU real easily or whatever. It's just much easier to manipulate.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's definitely, I've had issues with other
right.
other boxes, just trying to get something in and out of it. You know, right. and they're like, well, it's toolless, right? And you're like, it's toolless, but you've got massive, like, you can't get fingers into places to pop tabs and stuff. Like, you just can't do it without right. removing other pieces. So,
right.
you know, they're little things that these guys think about that have made my life, like what I'm saying, that the systems have gotten easier.
Right.
It might be because of some of the things that they've actually
sure.
implemented that now we're just like, well, this makes it simple.
Right.
But no, I think overall, I think it's about the user, and every user is going to use software different. They're going to use the hardware differently.
Right.
And they have to understand that a computer is not just a computer.
Right.
I mean, at its base level, yes. But the way that they're using it, it's the hammer. I brought up this brick, hammer, nail. You can hammer a nail with a brick if you want to.
Right.
And you might slam your thumb a few times, right? So you're going to move to a hammer, but you're not taking a sledgehammer to a finishing nail.
Right.
You could, but why? Right? So it really boils down to understanding what your workflow is, monitoring your resources, you know, doing the extra work as a professional artist so that you can get the most out of that system for relatively the least money. So your ROI is actually higher.
Right.
It's the business aspect. And I think Grayson brought up a good point. Is the business end of it is important.
So yes, you basically, a lot of people are going into hardware, especially when they're picking PCs, and saying, where can I get my most performance per dollar?
Yeah.
Right? Or whatever that happens to be. However, there are people who don't care
yeah.
how much they pay because they want to make sure it's a pretty computer.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, there's that.
And
yeah.
that pretty computer mentality can happen from some people in the creative field, right?
Yeah.
Because they want something to look pretty. They don't just want it to be functional, right? They
True.
Want it to be, I'd rather drive an Audi than a Toyota Corolla. They can both do the same thing.
Yes, they get you from point A to point B. No, there are, like, again, there are reasons that people might go for pretty computer. I mean, they might be in a design office where everything has to be designy, it's part of the aesthetic. I get it. You know, I understand that. But if performance is something that you need, you have to, it's, you got to weigh it out. What's right. the most important thing to you? You know, and so, yeah, it's software, hardware. It just has to work. It has to be in cohesion 100% with what the artist needs on it. And it's not, you can't just throw a rock and go, oh, that one will work, because you got to test, you got to understand what the test case is. And you're the only test case.
I'm going to try to do real quick, because we're kind of running a little bit low on time, but sure. I want to talk about laptops.
Okay.
And it is why I want to talk about it. And I want to talk specifically in the context of an artist right here, or someone who's over at THU. Laptop is a mobile computer, right? It goes with you. You do a lot of work on it. You can do a lot. It's generally speaking, I do most of my work on my laptop, right? Because I'm doing a lot of stuff on there. And I use the workstation when I got to do stuff.
Right.
Now, if I'm still a modeler in a company, I'm going to use the workstation almost exclusively. But I'm doing a lot of stuff on there, especially personal stuff.
Yeah.
Goes on this laptop. Mm-hmm. That laptop then becomes a representation of yourself. And that's where I'm coming in at the aesthetic look, right?
Right, right.
So as you open up that laptop, you want to make sure that representation represents your work perfectly, sure. and looks great, right? Or if I'm going to a conference, I don't want to open a laptop that doesn't look great, you know? So I think it's really important. And I think, you know, over the last several years, I think the ThinkPad line has definitely gotten better, and I love the yogas.
Yeah.
The yogas are really great. But what do you think are the trends that you're going to see in mobile laptops, and what that means and implies to the creative field?
Yeah, this over the last couple of years has taken a dramatic shift.
Yeah.
Because I can say even 4 or 5 years ago, most of the conversations we were having around true professional users in mobile said, look, I just need the power. I get that it's going to be bigger, thicker, heavier. I get it. That's okay. What I'm going to get. A couple of years ago, the shift is on. In right. a big way, to where they say, wait a minute, I'm getting thin and light in everything else that I have, and mobile, and easy to carry, and why can't I get that in my mobile workstation now?
Right.
Now, the good thing is, it's working out. We're getting to the technologies and all that. Unfortunately, where I'm really excited about it is something that I can't talk about until next summer, yep. in which case I may have even talked too much, but... yeah, it's going that way, and we are very aware and actually excited and embracing that, because what that means is it's going to put that level of power in a lot more people's hands.
Yeah.
Right? So where maybe you're not the professional today, but you have the aspirations.
Yep.
You can now have that power in sure. the system, the one system that you want to take everywhere that you want to go.
Yeah, right.
But it's been dramatic. I mean, it almost happened like overnight where they said, yeah, the thin and light, really thin and light.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We want that with workstation power
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think that obviously, like, it's not going to, there is no laptop on the planet that is a desktop replacement. Anybody that says this will replace your desktop.
I mean, how?
Right? Yeah,
the one that does all the stuff that I need
right.
weighs a ton because yeah. it has to.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
can't shrink that.
No, there's no way. And well, it might be able to replace, say, like my mother's desktop computer, right?
Sure.
It might be able to do that. Laptops can do that, but it's not going to replace my workstations. It
right.
just simply won't. It's just they don't have the power. Secondly, it's, you know, when you start really ramping these things up and really pushing them. The battery can only last for so long, all right? And,
right.
And then the heat. So, you can get thin and light, and you can do short bursts of work, but when you really have to sit down and you're working on these things all day, there isn't going to, I mean, unless magic happens where...
Well, what about external CPUs?
Yes, well, today, there's...
you still need CPUs.
Right, you still need CPUs. There's still other things. Even NVMe drives, and they heat up. You know, they get hot. So,
right.
you know, there's always going to be heat dissipation issues. External GPUs can solve a bit of it, but the thing is that, you know, they're going to, speed up and ramp down. I mean, when they heat up, they're going to
yeah.
lower their power consumption, and they're going to cool themselves down. So... that's what you need them to do.
Right.
But external GPU stuff, like, you know, and I think we were having this discussion as well. It's like getting more of that Thunderbolt accessibility on the North Bridge. So we can get it off of the I.O.,
right.
That Southbridge I.O. port or I.O. controller, get it off there because it's limited. That's a massive bottleneck, right? For storage in general, but especially when you start plugging in external like graphics, it just doesn't work. You know, it's just not going to work. So getting that moved over and ported over onto the North Bridge, that's going to be key. That's like a key element. But again, you have to have it plugged in. The thing's still going to be fired up, and you know. So at that point, yes, the machine is portable, but are you going to be carrying around the GPU with you? You know, potentially if they start to shrink those.
And that's part of what we've had to plan for, is we've had to expand portfolios and the level of performance across it all just because of that.
Right?
Are people going to be in a situation where they need two systems, right? And the complement, where you know, a relatively lower performing, we're still talking workstations, so they're all going to work pretty well, but a relatively lower performing mobile, but still keep, right, what they need for their rendering, those kinds of items. But the mobiles are also getting more powerful enough that, you know, in sort of some of the 17-inch models and all that, maybe you can handle, where you couldn't before, your full end-to-end, and we have to plan for all of it,
sure,
because people are going to be in a different place across that entire spectrum.
Yeah, I think eventually, I think software is going to get to a point too where they're going to start almost treating everything like, you might have all your software applications loaded on your laptop. So yeah, you can get on a plane, you can fly across the country or across the world. And yeah, you can do some light work and whatever. But when you actually get to a spot where you can sit down and you've got Wi-Fi connectivity, you're going to end up with a pseudo VDI type of situation, right, where you're like, look, I'm just going to rent cores on the cloud somewhere, and CPUs, GPUs, and basically spin up a machine that is just beastly somewhere else.
Yeah.
But the latency, then you know the distance between us.
I have thoughts about that. But unfortunately, we're out of time. So really quick before we go, I want to make sure that we talk about where people can get more information. Obviously, just Lenovo.com to
Lenovo.com. Also, we do have a microsite that goes in greater detail for configuration guidance and a tour of the products, just because sometimes that's needed.
Right.
So that's ThinkWorkstations.com.
ThinkWorkstations.com. Awesome. And what about, obviously, Noman
School? Noman.edu.
Noman.edu.
We're a real school, so visit
us
anytime.
You're just down the street from us, so.
Yeah.
All right, sounds great. All right, well, thanks so much, guys.
All right, bud.
Thank you.
I'm here with Daniel and Ford, right? And we're going to talk about this awesome thing that we do every year at THU, which is called the Golden Ticket, which reminds me, of course, of the movie
Willy Wonka,
yeah. Right? And so you guys were the sponsor of the Golden Ticket, right, over at
That's
our station.
Right. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about the Golden Ticket.
Yeah, sure. So we've been running the Art Station Challenges for about 18 months.
Right.
So I think about 6 months into it, we ran the first Golden Ticket Challenge for THU. So basically it was based around the theme, one theme, and everyone registered, competed, and the main prize was actually a trip to Troyer.
Right.
It was the last ticket, you know, for the event. So I think there was also like workstation prizes and all sorts of things. So it was a pretty exciting thing.
Right.
This year we ran it. We had, I think, around 900 entries.
900 entries.
And really amazing artists. So not just entry level, but all the way up to professional artists as well. Ford won the Golden Ticket Challenge against 900 other artists, and he's taken his rightful place in Troyer.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's really awesome. So, Ford, welcome to Troyer. This is your first THU?
Yeah, this is my first THU.
Which is really cool. I'd love to know a little bit about what you decided to do and about the art pieces you made for the competition and how it got here. So tell us a little bit about what inspired you to do that.
Okay. So basically this year's theme is about clan.
About the clan.
Yes. And in the description, they are saying, try to do a piece like to show your cultural background, to show your identity, how your art, like what is the background like of your art, like how you become the artist who you are.
Right.
So I was born in China and then went to US, so blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But I think my roots still like deep into like the Eastern culture, like the especially Chinese culture, like all the myths, all the dynasties, like a long, long time histories and stuff like that.
Right.
So once I saw that, I was super intriguing to it. And then I was thinking, huh, what could be clan? Like, clan is so easily to emerge into Chinese culture.
Okay.
Thing. So I was doing some research, and personally, I really love music.
Yeah.
And especially traditional music and classical music. And I found this amazing drum band in Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And they're putting Zen and drum together. Performance, and I was in shock. It was like, I think it's a perfect way that express like Chinese culture in a sense. So I just add my own twist into it, and I design all the characters, and I create a clan of drummers. Those are tiny, but I try to make them cute and interact with each other, and put THU unicorn like symbolism into it.
Right.
That's how I make the piece.
But it's a very elaborate piece. It's one of those wonderful pieces where you can just look at everything and there's always something going on. And when I was a kid, I remember my mother took me to the museum, and I fell in love with Bruegel paintings because there's so much stuff going on and all those little things. But I love the thing, and it's very, definitely very, very traditional in a lot of ways of what you're talking about, Eastern culture. Obviously, you know more than I do. But can you tell us a little bit about what was it? Was it done as a 2D drawing? Was it done as a 3D drawing?
It was done completely in 3D.
Okay.
I don't have any paint overs, which is interesting.
Right.
Because personally, I'm a TA. I'm a technical artist.
Right.
So I wrote code for a living.
Uh-huh.
I don't do art for a living.
Right.
Coming from tech background, I'm really into technology, and I always think technology is not against art.
No, that's good to hear, and that's something
exactly.
I think there's a lot of people somehow who rebel against technology because they don't understand it, and I think you're right. You say they think it's against it, but people use it all the time.
Yeah,
you know?
It's always been there. If you look at art history, it's every great artist. They're also technologists. Like they innovate. They innovate the new technology, new paint, new way of doing something.
Exactly. I was talking about the Dutch masters. I did a talk today, and I talked about the Dutch masters. Those guys were chemists because they mixed their own paint in order to make their paints so
vibrant. That's why they make them unique. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's great. So tell me a little bit about your being a technical artist. And what.
Being a technical artist.
Where do you work, so by the way?
Oh, I work at the Industrial Light and Magic.
Okay,
and
great.
X-Lab.
It's a little place. At X-Lab.
X-Lab. Right. It's because at RM, they always look into the future, and they have this, because AR and VR, everyone knows it's the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's literally the first time I see as it's the right media that break the boundaries, that can bring people's vision into another level.
Okay.
Like we were literally breaking the 2D surface.
Right.
So far we always see like video games, movies, they're all the same.
Right.
Like they're still projected into a flat screen.
Right.
But once you fully 360 full image and full information surrounding you,
right.
That's a totally different experience.
Right.
It's exhausting. Like almost everyone tried that, experienced it. They say it's awesome, but once they get out, they feel like the whole world is boring.
Right,
sensory overload.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know. I've been looking at the Daval VR stuff, and I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's really hard taking off those goggles because you're completely disoriented. You don't know, and it's like, it looks a little bit.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard to do.
And as a TA, I was in there like play as basically, my main job is look dev and real-time rendering.
Okay.
And in a way, I can say I'm writing code for art purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to achieve the film look in VR.
Right.
So everyone knows it's really hard.
Right.
And basically, that's what I'm aiming for, like to overcome that challenge.
Interesting.
That we can have that real time, like a film quality in real time. and 360.
Well, I'd love to talk to you about this some more, because this is, I have a feeling actually you and I are going to have a side conversation later tonight, because this is something I'm definitely very interested in.
Yes.
And I think you're right. That's something that's important. And it serves more than just the film quality. I think it serves a huge industry in general. Mm. It's fascinating. I really love what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But I want to get back to Daniel for a second, because I want to make sure that people understand the importance and the role that ArtStation has at a place like THU. So tell us a little bit about ArtStation and what role they're playing here, because they've been a partner for a very long time, am I correct?
I think like a lot of people, we came to THU for the first time having no idea really what it was about.
Right.
So we were here for a couple of days, sort of immersed ourselves and, you know, drank the Kool-Aid, as it were. Sort of we were transformed. And after that, we sort of had, you know, extensive conversations with Andre, and we really, you know, had confidence in the fact that he had a vision for, you know, where this was going, how he was going to expand it. It perfectly fit into our strategy. Mm-hmm. We were a startup at that stage. We're, you know, in our first year.
Right.
We've only been around three years. Look how big you've gotten now.
Yeah. In 3 years.
It's a roller coaster. We're actually getting, I think, around 3.2 million unique visitors to the site each month now.
So wow.
It's dizzying. Yeah, we have double the engineers now that we did, you know, a year ago, just to keep everything moving and, you know, keep new features happening. But, yeah, with THU, you know, it was the perfect time for us to partner with an event like this. It's the most important event for us for the year. It just completely, it brings together, 600, 900 artists who we get to talk to. It's almost like a huge focus group. You know, we get to see, you know, yeah. what everybody's doing, what they want. You know, if we're hitting the spot, you know, what they need from an art platform. So, yeah, it's perfect for us. It's been great.
So I find it fascinating that you guys have, so many, had such growth over so many years. But I also think what's fascinating is that what I see on ArtStation is very highly reflective of THU, right?
It's
almost like you guys have been like working together to foster this creativity and applaud it and find a good way to do it and just get people too excited, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's excited when they go onto ArtStation. People are excited when they come to THU.
The two missions of each organization are really similar. Like, you know, THU is to transform, you know, people and, you know, bring them into this sort of tribe. And with ArtStation, you know, our goal from the beginning was to change artists' lives, you know, to put, you know, opportunities in front of them and to help them, you know, get to the next level. So that's what I'm saying about that sort of, you know, the combined paths. It's very similar, you know, the directions that we're pushing in.
Right. And then with the competitions you guys are doing, that actually really incentivizes people to do things, because that puts their work in front of a lot of eyes. It gets them excited. They get to win prizes or whatever it happens to be. But I know of several directors. Actually, I'll tell you specifically, Tim Miller, who is one of the owners of Blur, he specifically goes onto sites like ArtStation and looks at art one by one by one himself. Yeah. Doesn't necessarily use a recruiter's like, I need two lighters or one model or whatever. He's like, nope. He handpicks these guys. Like, let's get in touch with this person.
We built ArtStation, you know, as a discovery tool. So it's an artist tool to promote their work, but it's also a discovery tool for anybody like a recruiter or, you know, even fans to sort of find that artwork. And with the challenges, we've partnered with big studios. We actually did a Star Wars challenge last year.
Oh, really?
Which was a recruitment challenge for ILM. And
oh, interesting.
It was the biggest fanboy moment of my life, really, because we had, the ArtStation Star Wars challenge. 16 ILM art directors were judging.
Right.
They set the brief. It was a three-stage process. There was, an environment or keyframe challenge. There was a vehicle challenge, and then there was a boot camp challenge at the end of it.
So right.
The boot camp challenge was moving deadlines, moving briefs. The artists had to be on their feet for the entire challenge. And they were trying to simulate a work environment, studio work environment, which was really cool.
Right.
So, Yeah, the feedback that we get from artists on these challenges is that they're doing it for learning. So
right.
More than 70% of the artists are doing it for learning and feedback, which is really interesting.
Well, that's really great. Now Ford, you were telling me that obviously you're more of a you're at work, you're a technical artist. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you don't necessarily spend a lot of time modeling and lighting and doing things like
Not
that.
Not really.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but you are doing it on your own, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So this stuff. So that's basically what you're doing at home. Is you're basically going to Art Station. You're getting inspired, and you're doing
yes.
things.
That's one thing I really love about Art Station is you got to see your favorite artist's work and someone you don't even know their name,
right.
And you saw their work, you're just in awe.
Right.
And as artists in the soul, I just like, oh my God, I got to do something.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I do. Like, so I'm all my weekend, like every night I went home and just start like doing something,
right.
Doing some art. But by doing art, I mean not only art. Like every piece I do, I was trying to learn something. I was trying to learn like lighting, for example, or new way of shading,
right.
Or new shader, or new rigging, or anything. Like any aspect of it. So eventually by doing, and I love to join all these competitions,
right.
Even though some
for the same
them,
reasons that down
exactly
yeah.
Like as a learning process,
right?
Because you have a limitation and you have a goal, and you work through that,
right?
And then you can just keep accumulating your skills, and eventually you basically know everything.
Eventually.
Yeah,
we
that's
so.
The
yeah,
ultimate
eventually.
Goal.
Yeah, I don't think it's hard. That's the thing I like about CG is that there is no end to learning.
Yeah.
Like, I learned it all.
No, it's not every day, and the next day is all changed again.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really fascinating. I think it's great. What are some of the favorite things that you've learned by doing some of these competitions? Like, what are the things that are the most memorable? It's like, oh, you know, this was a really great one because I learned. Okay, for example, let's take the THU competition that you did. What did that process teach you?
They teach me. Okay. First, I go more deeper into my own culture. Like,
yeah.
I literally went to the Asian art museums, and there's an exhibition there.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally went there and do research.
Right.
I was taking photos of the patterns, and somehow in the process, I know better about my own culture.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And then when I come back and start doing something, and by the time when I join the competition, and I know I don't have enough time to really achieve what I really want to show. So I have to figure out a way that's really clever to make it happen in the time frame I have.
Right.
So what I did is very tricky. Even though you can see those characters are all different,
mm-hmm.
I did some like I used like the modular system.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically rigged different body types,
right,
and different expressions.
Yeah,
and then I used code just to merge them together.
Right,
and then it worked out perfectly because in this way you save a lot of time, and then you generate like at least 20 characters in one image.
So you felt you learned about some efficiency tools that you were in there,
yes,
right?
And a new way, I would say. Like,
right.
It's for me, it's a new way to do multiple characters all at the same time.
That's because you're a technical artist. You want to be more efficient and things to be faster.
Yeah, always thinking about efficiency.
Yeah, no, it's great. I think efficiency is underrated.
Yes.
People want to talk about how ridiculously complex they did instead of going, you know what, I did this really, really simply.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, then it was, if you did it simply, then that's bad. It's like, no, simplicity sometimes is actually beautiful in a lot
yes.
of ways.
And so. Sometimes it's like, by sort of using technology, you can get so many details in something that really, really fast.
Interesting.
And that's the other benefit.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Daniel, really quick, as we're getting close, but I'd like to ask you a few questions about trends. Like you said, you know, obviously ArtStation came about three years ago. You guys were a startup, right?
Yeah.
And now you're one of probably the biggest sites out there in terms of sharing your art. What are the trends that you've noticed over the 3 years so far?
We, with the challenges, we get a really good indication of you know, the where the artists are coming from, what their specializations are, mm-hmm. what their interests are, because we run you know, multiple categories for each challenge. So we have like real-time categories for characters and environments. We have you know, rendered categories for matte paintings, characters as well, and as well as concept art. So one of the things that we're really seeing is a surge in the game development, the real-time side of things.
Interesting.
So a lot of artists who, you know, previously were 2D artists are now using 3D tools in their workflows, and they're actually moving on to you know, game, real-time game engines as right. their delivery platform. So that seems to be like a big sort of trend that we're seeing now, is that the majority of people who are doing the challenges are, you know, interested in game assets.
But do you feel that they're interested in actual games?
I think, yeah, obviously.
You think they are, or do you think they're actually just using the game platform as a means of expressing their art?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but I think, you know, we're looking at a generation of artists who have grown up on games.
Right.
They've never known a time when there weren't, you know, computer games, so that's their language now.
Right.
It's part of their language, so I think that it's just a, you know, extension of them. You know, their art is to produce something that they've known, you know, all along, which is probably taking over, you know, what TV was for previous generations.
Right. Right. Well, that's cool. Okay. Obviously, we're getting a little bit low on time, but I'd like to let people know where they can find you. So obviously, just go to artstation.com, and there's tons of stuff. Is there upcoming competitions that people should be aware of?
We have just completed a competition which Ford participated in,
yeah.
Which was Beyond Human. So that's just entered judging now.
Okay.
And the results will be out on October 2nd. So
okay.
Go to artstation.com/contests. You'll see the results. And you can also look at previous challenges that we've done. So you can see the community challenges we do, the studio challenges. You know, there's amazing learning resources. You can see what all the artists have done, you know, their process. So yeah, I'd recommend looking at that.
Okay, great. And what about you? Is there any place that people can go to follow some of your work?
Art Station.
Okay, well, Art Station is your best place. That's great. That's really cool. Well, I'm really glad you guys are able to make it. This is really wonderful. I'm so glad that you're back at THU. We get to see each other all the time, which is really fun. Really love your work, and I'm glad you're able to come here and enjoy it. Enjoy Troia. Are you enjoying it so far?
Yeah, I'm enjoying it so much.
Yeah.
All this talk is amazing. People are amazing here.
Great.
Yeah. Find the same people.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.